Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that is mad as hell and not going to take it anymore. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner of propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey, Corey.
So on this midweek shot, we're going to discuss the current crisis in the Labour Party over anti-Semitism. What exactly has happened? How has this suddenly become a thing? We're going to talk about all of that, hopefully without me shouting, swearing, crying or screaming after this. So, Steve, there's been a number of different incidents over the last couple of weeks since we were last recording, which have kind of snowballed into a big anti-Semitic mess, aren't they?
You know, this all seemed, I think, started off Luciana Berger, who is one of the Labour MPs in and around Liverpool, posted something on Twitter, I believe it was, where she'd found basically an image from a couple of years ago where Jeremy Corbyn was basically seemingly defending a clearly anti-Semitic mural. This mural, if you haven't seen it, has basically every single anti-Semitic trope going in it. It has large-nosed, hook-nosed Jewish bankers playing Monopoly with real money on the backs of the poor. There's the Illuminati symbol in the background, and I can go on and on.
There's a New World Order sign, I think, as well, isn't there?
Yeah, pretty much everything, every conspiratorial bit of nonsense in there, including, I think, chemtrails. I think chemtrails actually appear in it as well.
Right.
So it is absolute anti-Semitic nonsense of the highest order. Corbyn claims that when he initially first saw the mural on Facebook, he didn't pay much attention to it, and he was more reacting to the fact that this mural was going to be taken down. And he compared it to the Rockefellers removing an anti-capitalist.
It was a statue, a picture of Lenin, I think.
Yeah, a picture of Lenin being removed from somewhere in the US by the Rockefellers because it was, you know, anti-capitalist. The excuse that he wasn't really paying attention didn't really please very many people, especially in the Jewish community, because it doesn't take much to actually identify that this mural was clearly anti-Semitic. And in fact, the artist in question, when you dig into it even more, has got a bit of a history of these sorts of things. Even went as far as to appear on being interviewed by David Icke, he of the conspiracy theory where all of the world leaders are lizard men. So that tells you the kind of person he is and what kind of things he's involved with. And as a result of Corbyn not doing a very good job initially of talking about why he was defending this mural and why he thought it should have been left up despite being obviously anti-Semitic. Originally he said, oh, it was a freedom of expression issue, which was then kind of poo-pooed very, very quickly into, I didn't see it. I didn't realise. I was looking at it on a small screen and I didn't quite realise what it was I was looking at. Which, again, is nonsense, because if you're supposedly steeped in the anti-racism and anti-fascist tradition that Jeremy Corbyn is supposed to be, you are aware of what these things look like. Either he's a complete idiot, or it's just absolute nonsense. The Jewish community then decided it was time to take to the streets and decided to protest. I believe it was outside Parliament whilst Shadow Cabinet was having a meeting, or it was the weekly parliamentary Labour Party meeting, or something
I think
of that
it was
sort.
The PLP, yeah.
Yeah. At which a number of parliamentary Labour Party MPs decided that they too thought enough was enough and joined the protest along with some Conservatives, along with some SNP people, along with basically everybody from all of the different parties that are represented in Parliament.
I think we should say at this point that this might have been, I think the mural was the catalyst for a lot of the protests. One thing to add maybe is that this kind of fits a pattern of Corbyn overlooking anti-Semitism in pursuit of what you could say a greater cause, quote unquote. So here it was more about artistic freedom rather than looking at whether it was anti-Semitic. And it's the pattern of behaviour going on over a few years, such as calling Hamas and Hezbollah, which are quite clearly have anti-Semitic elements in their constitution, saying that they're their friends, or supporting clerics like, I think, Raed Saleh, who has said that Jews drink the blood of children, Corbyn calling people like that an honour citizen. So there's a number of instances where I think broadly because of the involvement with anti-Israeli movements and anti-Zionist movements, a lot of toleration for those who are quite anti-Semitic, people like Gilad Atman as well, the musician, are tolerated, and that's what's kind of led to this protest too.
Yeah, and that kind of context of at the very least turning a blind eye to anti-Semitism is exactly how we've gotten to where we are today, because Corbyn's comment on about that mural was originally reported 2 years ago by the Jewish Chronicle.
And the strange thing, I think, is for all that people like Chris Williamson and Len McCluskey have tried to minimise the issue of anti-Semitism, have tried to say, either in the case of Len McCluskey, that it's mood music, or Chris Williamson saying it's been weaponised by the right. It's strange, actually, this wasn't really a big issue in either of the leadership campaigns, not in 2015 or 2016. As you say, the Jewish Chronicle picked up on it in 2015, but there was no real attempt to link Jeremy with any of these movements back then. I'm guessing almost because, arrogantly, the other candidates thought he had no chance of winning and didn't really seem fit to make the argument. I think it was only Yvette Cooper who, towards the end of that 2015 campaign, talked about some of Jeremy's views being a bit extreme, but she didn't talk about any of the foreign policy stuff, any of the anti-Semitism stuff. It was always purely through the lens of he's unelectable, yep. Which, as we've talked about in previous podcasts, is the wrong frame to see Jeremy in. Mm-hmm. The frame is the foreign policy views are a little bit dodge and leads you to...
And he's incompetent.
And leads you to hang around with some quite dodgy people.
Yeah. On top of all of that then, so that's kind of anti-Semitism scandal prime. At the same time as all of this is going on, it emerges that Christine Shawcroft, who is a member of Labour's National Executive Committee and did sit as the chair of the disciplinary panel, was involved in a bit of an anti-Semitism scandal herself. Christine Shawcroft, as the head of the disciplinary panel, was the person responsible for ultimately making the case for or against whether or not people who had been referred to the panel for anti-Semitism should be punished or not. Should they be thrown out of the party? Should they be forced to go through certain types of training? That sort of stuff. At least one case that she was looking at involved somebody posting.
So it was Alan Bull, who was a council candidate, or is at the moment, I think, a council candidate for Labour in Peterborough, and posts are from Facebook from, I think, August 2016 have come up, where he shares stuff that say the International Red Cross have said that the Holocaust is a hoax.
And rather than looking at the evidence and the fact that there was screenshots, URLs of all of these sorts of things actually out there, Christine Shawcroft then sends out an email to other members of the disciplinary panel, including well-known figures such as John Landsman from Momentum, basically starts talking about how, oh, this isn't a case of anti-Semitism. This is a case of, he's Momentum. He's being, in effect, bullied and reported because he's not on the right faction up in Peterborough. This then leaks. Quite rightly so, I think. There are two ways to look at this. One is she's deliberately overlooking, she doesn't understand what anti-Semitism is and is therefore in no position to be making any calls on this matter. Or two, she's completely and utterly incompetent at her job. She had evidence directly in front of her, which she was supposed to be looking at to make these calls, and yet she was clearly making calls off the back of rumour and hearsay rather than the evidence, and trying to back people just because they were members of Momentum, just because they were on part of her faction. Ultimately, she resigns from the as chair of the disciplinary panel. She remains, however, at that point on the National Executive for Labour. A few days after that, one thing seems to lead to another, and eventually she does decide to stand down from the National Executive. And seemingly, and this again goes back to that tolerance that Corbyn and a lot of the left seem to have for fellow travellers who might hold dodgy views, or at least be willing to turn a blind eye to dodgy views. Seemingly, the only reason that she wasn't forced out straight away was because the way that the Labour rules work is that Shawcroft would be replaced by the person who came third or fourth or whatever it was in that
next cab off the rank, basically.
Yeah. The person who came after her was Eddie Izzard, the comedian, well-known Labour supporter, but more importantly, well-known Labour moderate. He is not necessarily a particularly fan of Jeremy Corbyn in a lot of ways. He is going to be, in my opinion, an independent voice on Labour's national executive. I don't think he is actually going to be particularly beholden to one slate or another or one particular viewpoint. But because he wasn't fully signed up to Jeremy Corbyn's programme, they did not want him on. And because Christine Shawcroft had already said, oh, I'm not going to be running for the NEC again in 3 or 4 months, whenever she was up for election again, they decided, okay, well, that's enough. She's not in charge of it. She's not running again. We can ride this out. Turns out they couldn't. It continued to be a story day after day after day. And eventually she was kicked out, seemingly by Jeremy Corbyn actually having a word with her.
I think it's worth saying at this point that the reason why Christine Shawcroft is head of, or was head of, this disciplinary panel is because after there was a Corbynite majority on the NEC, Anne Black, who was is of the left, I think was part of Momentum slate for the NEC when she was running a couple of years ago. She was head of the disputes panel, was generally seen as being fair to all factions of the party. She was replaced by Christine Shawcroft as a head of the disciplinary panel, and that caused a little bit of ripples in Labour circles because that was seen as essentially the leadership trying to take over a lot of the internal institutions in the party. And we've seen recently the leaving of Ian McNicol as General Secretary, the replacement by Jenny Formby, and the replacement of Anne Black by Christine Shawcroft was seen as part of that. So it feels like it's also a bit of a power play from the leadership office, which has kind of blown up in their face a little bit. I think the other thing about the Shawcroft incident shows that a lot of people trying to talk about what Labour needs to do with anti-Semitism, we're going to talk about that in a future podcast rather than now. But a lot of people like Owen Jones have written, they've written fairly powerfully that actually it's about education. So essentially that there's lots of new members who aren't aware of these anti-Semitic tropes. I think it falls down on the Shawcroft point, I mean, precisely because it's about Holocaust denial. And I would like to think that you don't need to be that well-educated in anti-Semitic tropes to know that Holocaust denial is just not a good thing to do. As you say, the head of the disputes panel isn't reading emails. She's just defending someone without looking at the evidence, which points, I think, to a deeper problem that a lot of people seem to assume this is a smear on the leadership when it really, really isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with all of that. There is very much seemingly an assumption in certain parts of the Corbynite left, not all by any means. I actually think Owen Jones in particular has kind of actually covered himself quite well in that for the most part he was able to jump on this and say, no, Corbyn needs to do something about this. This is a blemish on the left of all sorts. We need to stamp this out. Yes, the Tories have got their racists as well. You know, we need to deal with this. And even some of the more less self-aware members of the Corbynite left, such as Aaron Bastani of Novara Media, after enough days of this stuff coming out, turned around and admitted on Twitter, yeah, I didn't understand this until recently. So there is elements of progress happening there, but it's one of those things where pressure still needs to be kept up in some form for anything to actually happen.
Over a week, about a week or so ago, over the kind of Easter Passover period, it's when the story takes a different turn. We have Judas, not that one.
Judas spelt J-E-W-D-A-S.
Indeed. So Jeremy Corbyn goes to a Seder, which is nice because outreach the Jewish community, that's what he said he needs to do, and goes to Judas, who are a group of left-wing Jews, essentially, mm-hmm. in his constituency of Islington.
So he goes to this left-wing group of Jews for a Passover Seder, which in and of itself is absolutely fine. In fact, an awful lot has been posted about Corbyn's attendance at Judas, and actually an awful lot of what's been said about this is complete crap. The best way I can put this is that Judas themselves are an anti-Zionist sect, if that's the correct word to use, faction of the Jewish community. They are radical leftists in a lot of ways. They also don't take themselves very seriously. In a lot of instances, if you check out their website and their Twitter feed, they take the piss out of themselves and everyone else quite a bit. That kind of taking the piss attitude has led them to post some interesting comments, including one which has led them to post some interesting comments, one of which was about the current coverage of the anti-Semitism scandals that Labour has found itself in and Corbyn has found itself in, where they basically said that certain elements were trying to weaponise, you know, the claims to anti-Semitism. Which, you know, there is actually some truth to that. To be quite honest, most of the Tory party probably don't give a rat's arse either way. But the fact that they are, neither does the Daily Mail, I suspect. But the Daily Mail is still running with it as one of their leading stories day in, day out, because it damages Labour. So absolutely, there are some people who are focusing on this for the wrong reason.
I mean, that leads me to a poll that was in the Sunday Times, which has been much quoted, saying something like 30% of Labour members don't think it's a problem at all. But if you look at it, actually, most Labour members, 47%, think, yes, there's a problem, but it is being exaggerated to have a go at Jeremy Corbyn. And I think some people, I think the Sunday Times, I think it was Sam Coates, I think reported it a little bit disingenuously, because I think you're right, like, there is definitely a genuine problem. However, it's definitely being...
It's been spun. It's not that it's been exaggerated, it's that it's been spun in a particular way.
Indeed.
To try and damage Labour rather than focusing on the actual issue itself. So you've got that aspect, and then you've also got the fact that Judas as a group have made some provocative comments about Israel, describing it as a sewer that needed to be disposed of. My opinion on this, to be quite honest, is that actually they actually have done an awful lot of good work on anti-Semitism. They are not self-hating Jews. They are anti-Zionists, absolutely. They do not approve of Israel. And a lot of the things that Israel has done in regards to Gaza and the occupied territories. But then what this situation does show us, though, is once more Jeremy Corbyn's inability to pay attention to who he's hanging around with, which... And when you're leader of the opposition, you need to be very careful who you're hanging around with on your free time, even if it is not in an official capacity, because who you hang around with matters. Because if Corbyn had been Prime Minister when this came out, this would have been an international incident between Britain and Israel, because he is hanging around and endorsing, in effect, a group that is calling for the abolition of the of Israel itself.
I think what it does do is it reinforces that Jeremy is just talking to those who he agrees with. I also kind of agree with a little bit what David Schneider, the comedian, was saying, is that he's probably in a bit of a no-win situation now. If he'd have ended up pulling out of it, it would have been, why aren't you going to this Seder and going to another one? And so I think the problem is that the critique of Corbyn going to Judas is a bit more nuanced. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, I think, haven't been very nuanced with it. And you can see that the Daily Mail have a ridiculous headline where they held a beetroot in the air and said, screw capitalism, but not screw. It's a different word, a synonym, one might say. And I think it's one of those things where... The Daily Mail doesn't get the in-joke at all and it's just trying to make political capital of it, as we've talked about. I think, again, it's a little bit of political flat-footedness, one might say. So that happened. As we said, there was a protest and there were a few Labour MPs there. So, for instance, David Lammy was there, Fangham Debonair as well as a few others. Now, you then have the backlash against the backlash. So there was a Guardian headline which said David Lammy faces deselection or something to that effect. And again, that's a little bit overblown. So if you are reading a few of the posts on our website, notenoughchampagne.com, you'll see that my view generally is that the threat of deselection in the Labour Party generally has been over-exaggerated. What the Guardian was doing with this thing about David Lammy was a couple of people on the Tottenham Labour Facebook page had said that he should be deselected, and they're obviously wingnuts, probably not representative of even momentum in that constituency, let alone momentum nationally. And those comments have been blown up out of all proportion and then get shared by moderates on moderate Facebook groups as if to show, look, momentum are out deselecting MPs or this, and it just causes a lot of bad blood going out there.
The other side of the coin, though, is with Fangham Debonair. She attended this protest as well, and as a result, a number of policy points, discussion points, motions of censure were submitted to her local constituency party for discussion, debate and vote. What basically happened was some of these motions were not put forward because they were completely batshit insane, and were clearly coming from an anti-Semitic position themselves. So one of them was put forward as to vote. Ultimately, one of the motion would have censured Thangam Debonair for attending this anti-Semitism protest, which is a very odd thing for any political party of any ideology to do. You know, we don't want you to attending this anti-racism protest. That's nonsense of the highest order. And yet, despite it being complete and utter nonsense, 84 people turned up and voted for that motion at that Labour Party meeting in Bristol West. 102 or something like that voted against it, so it did not pass. Thangam Debonair was not officially censured in any capacity, but 84 people turned up and voted for that. That is suggests that, at the very least in Bristol West, there is a massive issue that needs to be addressed in some form.
It also sounds, from accounts of people who are at the meeting, and I think FT journalists, like I think Jim Pickard was there, just sounds like the atmosphere of the meeting was really, really toxic as well. A lot of heckling, sounds like the chair wasn't really able to keep control of the meeting. Thangam Debonair left.
After being shouted down when she was trying to explain why she was felt the need to be at an anti-racism rally.
And trying to give her constituency report as well. And she has a majority of 37,000. She is a hard-working shadow minister in health. She is a trade union member. But fuck you very much if you're going to heckle her giving a constituency report. Just fuck off. Right.
And on that depressing note.
briefly, that's the problem. What then do we do about it? How do we approach it as the Labour Party? How do we try and deal with it as a party and as a country? That's what we're going to talk about on next Sunday's episode. Until then, you can read some stuff on our website, notenoughchampagne.com, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter @JamesCram. And Dave Depper is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. My Twitter handle is PaperbackRioter.
Mine's @CenterRadical.
Happy plotting, everyone.